my reaction to that, Michael, is that that kind of loss of life while people are worshiping, or loss of life anytime senselessly, is tragic. And as a Methodist minister myself, I just believe that freedom to worship without fear, freedom to worship without threat of violence, is part of the foundations of our country. And that that is violated is both sobering and saddening, and we can do better as a country.
You issued a statement afterwards offering your sympathies and prayers, and I was wondering if there were any concrete steps in addition to sympathies and prayers that you'd be willing to support to lessen gun violence in the U.S.
Well, as I've said many, many times, first of all, I do support the Second Amendment, and secondly, that I would immediately want to ban any modification, including the bump stock, that turns a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. Furthermore, I think anyone who has committed domestic violence with a gun should be barred from having guns in the future. Those who have mental health issues and has been documented should not be allowed to have guns. These are the kinds of things I've been saying for more than a year here.
The synagogue massacre was one of just, well, three crimes in the past week that seemed to be motivated, at least in part, by the growing tribalism and demonization of political opponents we've been seeing lately. And organizations that track hate crimes say they've spiked markedly in recent years. Do you believe President Trump and other political leaders bear some responsibility for the current situation?
I think the data are clear that you just pointed out, that both the volume and the vitriol have accelerated exponentially in our political system. And that, of course, is not to our credit. I do believe that for all of us, whether we are running for office or in office or on the airwaves, we all know that words matter. And so I believe it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that our words are meant to bring healing and not to bring stigmatizing. I have believed my entire life that categorizing of people is not either the American way nor the way of people of faith.
I'd like to switch focus and look at some of the issues that have been front and center in your race against Representative Walorski. And one such issue is health care. You've criticized Representative Walorski for a failure to assure that insurance companies provide protections for pre-existing conditions, which I guess stems from her repeated votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Do you believe the Affordable Care Act should be kept?
Well, as I've said throughout this district, Michael, and again, I've been all over the 10-county district many, many times, and the number one issue I have heard has been health care. And one-third of all those who live in the second district have a pre-existing condition. And they live in fear that the health care rug will be taken out from underneath them. And it is accurate and data-driven to say that the current representative has voted 11 times to take health care away from those with a pre-existing condition. And that's, again, that's not an opinion. That is data. I've offered three or four ways that I believe we can improve health care delivery. First of all, I believe that we should increase insurance competition. As you, Michael, may know, and your listeners will know, about 30% of those who sign up on healthcare.gov live in an area where there's no insurance competition. And anytime there is not insurance competition, prices increase. So one, I would remove the artificial boundaries that insurance companies operate in. The second thing I would do to improve health care is that we must immediately allow Medicare to competitively bid prescription drugs. That is not a partisan issue. That is a common sense issue. So that's something we can do right now. The third thing that we can do right now, the American Hospital Association has reported, is that something like $38 billion a year in healthcare is wasted on non-clinical regulations. That refers generally to doctors calling insurance companies or billing department from a hospital or an assisted living facility or even a home health agency calling the insurance company, that is about $1,200 for every admitted patient. So again, those are the kinds of things that should not be partisan, and we can do those things quickly.
Representative Lewolorski has accused you of working for a lobbying firm that represented a pharmaceutical company that raised the cost of a drug used by pregnant women by like $1,000. Is that accusation accurate?
No, it is not. I have never worked for a lobbying firm. I do not own a law firm. I have nothing to do with that. There's no truth to that whatsoever.
Okay, let me re-ask the question then, perhaps. You said you've never worked for a lobbying firm. Did you work for a pharmaceutical company, or did you do work for a pharmaceutical company, and did you know about the large increase in the aforementioned drug, if so?
No, I've never worked for a pharmaceutical company. I've never been involved in anything like that. Nothing. That is not even remotely true. And it is, because you raised that, it's more than a little ironic that someone who has taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from the pharmaceutical interests in an effort to have her votes go their way accuses me of something that she knows is not true, that the law firm she named has said clearly it is not true. There's no basis whatsoever for that accusation.
President Trump has made immigration reform and the control of immigration the centerpiece of his time in office thus far. What are your thoughts on our immigration system? Do you think it needs changed? And if so, how?
This is another case, Michael, where I think we can do better. And this is another example, I think, where we have a group on one end of the political spectrum yelling and a group on the other end of the political spectrum yelling. And I'm of the view that we can actually do two things at once here. We can both protect families, keep them together, as well as have humane and just immigration policies. We can do that. And we can ensure that our borders are protected. We can ensure that people don't overstay their visa. We can ensure that people that are not supposed to be here, they go back. We can do two things at once here. This is not either or. We can both have safe and secure borders, which we must, and we can have a humane immigration policy.
To have safe borders, do we need to build a wall?
Well, I think there are a lot of ways that we can make sure that our borders are protected. I think there might be more economical ways to secure our borders through technology, through personnel. I just think there are a number of options that we should consider before centering on one. But again, the goal ought to be to have safe, humane immigration policy and to ensure that our borders are protected.
I'd like to ask your thoughts on the Republican tax cut. Shortly after that was passed, Republican leaders said there was a need to cut back on programs like Medicare to address the country's growing debt. Would you support cuts to Medicare?
No. I would not. And again, you asked me to be very direct. I want to be really clear that Medicare and Social Security, people have paid into that their entire life. The country has made a promise to folks. I believe as a Hoosier, as a minister, as a human being, that when you give your word, you keep it. And so I don't believe Social Security or Medicare should ever be a rainy day fund or something that you dip into when we have misspent or overspent somewhere else.
What about efforts to privatize the Social Security system, say with like a voucher program? Would you support something like that?
Well, again, I would call that a very clear distinction between me and my opponent. My opponent is on record publicly as being in favor of privatizing, and I am not. I believe, again, Social Security should be left as it is, and it should be safe for folks. So that's another very clear distinction. My opponent wants to privatize Social Security, is on record, has said that publicly, and I do not.
I'd like to ask you about trade quickly. The U.S. finds itself in a trade war with China. That includes tit-for-tat tariffs, which have the effect of helping some folks while hurting others. Do you think tariffs can be successful? And if not, what can we do to assure that the U.S. is on an equal playing field with our international competitors?
Well, Michael, I want to begin by saying very clearly China has been a bad actor as it relates to trade. They have been dumping steel and aluminum into this country. They have been paying workers pennies on the dollar. China has been a very, very bad actor. They have misused intellectual property. They have stolen intellectual property from countries. And so clearly something had to be done. In my view, the trade and tariff issues, though, have not been well thought out. In many ways, it has been a little bit of a knee-jerk response. And I think for many business owners across our district, it has resulted in significantly higher costs for them that some can pass on to consumers and some they can't. So in my view, again, China has been a really bad actor. I think we could have been more thoughtful and more strategic. But in addition, it's not just small businesses that are getting hurt. It's farmers. As you probably know, Michael, and your listeners know, about one out of every three rows of soybeans did go to China. And as the tariffs have been actualized, the price of soybeans per bushel has dropped from about $10.80 to $8.20 per bushel. Farmers need about $9 per bushel to break even. The price of milk has dropped from $23 a hundred down to $13 a hundred, and farmers need $18 a hundred to break even. So almost every farmer in the second district who's milking is losing hundreds of dollars every day. So again, I would say we need to do something. We need to continue to do something about China and their trade policies. I don't think what we have done has been strategic and well thought out, and certainly didn't have all the voices at the table that need to be heard.
I know I don't have a lot more of your time. I wanted to ask a couple of quick questions. You've come out and said you wouldn't support Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker. Why is that?
I have said that I would not support Nancy Pelosi. Part of my running for Congress has to do with, I think we need a different way of operating, if you will, in Washington, D.C. I don't know a single business, Michael, or a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a not-for-profit agency that runs the same way that it did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. And I think what we have in Washington is we need a change of leadership. And as a Democrat, I can't and won't just point the finger at the other party until I talk about my own party as well. So from my business background and in my work as a minister, my experience is if you do the same thing with the same people, you're going to get the same results. And that's why I've had this plan to fix Congress, and part of that starts with we need different leadership in my own party in the House. The other part of that is I'm for term limits. I will not serve more than three terms. I think that you, if you're in office, you ought to be required to have quarterly town hall meetings. I believe that if the Congress can't pass a budget, they should not get paid. I believe that you should not accept corporate PAC money. So this is a plan to fix Congress. And I would just end by saying this. When I go to Washington, I will not change all of Washington. But I know for certain I can change how we are represented here in the 2nd District, and I intend to do that.
I've got a follow-up on that real quick before I let you go. You just said if we're going to change Washington, we need to change the leadership, and that's why you won't support Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker. I read an article recently that suggested that Democrats are being forced to distance themselves from Nancy Pelosi because the Republicans have vilified her for so long. And the author suggested that that's just because Nancy Pelosi has been very effective at her job, specifically in helping pass Democratic proposals and in blocking Republican proposals that Democrats oppose. For instance, as House Minority Leader, she played a crucial role in turning back George W. Bush's attempt to privatize Social Security, something you said earlier in our conversation that you'd be against. As Speaker of the House, she was the key congressional figure in passing the Affordable Care Act. You mentioned earlier that you support portions of that legislation. Following the financial crisis, she helped enact the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to protect Americans from fraud. and she helped pass the Obama stimulus plan, which economists overwhelmingly agree mitigated job losses from the financial crisis. Moreover, she did all of that without the whiff of a personal scandal. From a Democratic perspective, isn't that a laudable record?
Again, from my experience, if we expect Washington to be different, we need to have different leadership.
Fair enough. Well, I thank you for your time this morning.
All right. Thank you, Michael.